Sleazy Mel Sleazygall was a poor Jew from Vilna who died in May of 1865. For 30 years he begged with a small bowl in his hands. Everywhere in town his call was familiar. Remember the poor, the widows, and the orphans. Over that time he collected 90,000 rubles, but he did not keep one single kopeck for himself. He relieved the sick, he himself looked after them. He paid for the education of poor children and distributed the food he was given to the needy. At night, the beggar spent his time preparing snuff, which he sold in order to provide for his own needs. Anything left over belonged to the poor. Zizi Mel had been alone in the world, but on the day of his burial, a large part of Vilna's population followed his funeral procession, and all the shops closed their doors. Parisian Spirit of Society, June 15, 1865. Evocation.
I have been here in your midst since the beginning of this meeting, extremely happy at having finally reached my goal, for which I paid a great price. I thank you for your interest in the spirit of a poor beggar. I will happily try to respond to your questions.
A letter from Vilna filled us in the most remarkable peculiarities of your life, and the sympathy they have inspired in us awaken our desire to communicate with you. We are grateful that you have answered our call, and since you wish to respond to us, we would be happy to know, for our instruction, your situation as a spirit, as well as the causes that determine the kind of life you led during your latest existence.
First of all, please grant to my spirit, which comprehends its true position, the favor of transmitting its opinion regarding a thought that has occurred to you regarding who I was. Please advise me if it is wrong. It seems odd to you that the public displays were so impressive in paying homage to the memory of a nobody, whom charity enabled to attract such sympathy. I am not referring to you, dear teacher, or to you, dear medium, or to you, all true and sincere spiritists, but to persons who are indifferent toward belief. There is nothing remarkable about what happened. The moral pressure exerted upon humankind through practicing the good is such that no matter how material one might be, one always bows before it. The good is always respected. It is welcome despite the tendency one may have toward evil. And now for your questions, which I know are not asked out of curiosity, but simply formulated for the sake of general instruction. Since I have the freedom to do so, I will tell you as succinctly as possible about the causes that motivated and determined my last existence. Many centuries ago, I lived with the title of king, or at least a sovereign prince. Within the sphere of my power, relatively limited when compared to today's states, I was nevertheless the absolute lord of my vassal's fate. I acted as a tyrant, or rather, let us use the proper term, as a tormentor. Of an imperious character, I was violent, avaricious, lustful, and from that fact you can imagine the fate of the poor beings who lived under my laws. I abused my power to oppress the weak, to tax all types of trades, occupations, passions, and pains for the service of my own passions. I even imposed a tithe on what beggars made. No one could beg for anything without my first taking the lion's share of the alms that human pity let drop into the pockets of poverty. There was even more, so that the number of beggars would not decrease among my vassals. I forbade those unfortunate beings from sharing with their friends, relatives, or kin any of the pittances that remained. In other words, I was the most heartless in every way regarding suffering and poverty. I finally lost what you call life in the midst of torment and horrendous suffering. My death was an example of terror for those who, like me, though on a smaller scale, shared my outlook. As a spirit, I remained in the errant state for 3.5 centuries. And at the end of that time, I finally understood that the purpose of reincarnating was something completely different than what my gross and obtuse senses had led me to pursue in the previous one. In answer to my prayers, resignation, and remorse, I received permission to take upon myself the physical task of enduring the same torments and much more that I had inflicted. I obtained this permission, and through my free will, God granted me the right to amplify my mental and physical suffering. Thanks to the support of good spirits assisting me, I persisted in my resolution to practice the good, and I thank them for they kept me from succumbing under the load I had taken upon my shoulders. I finally fulfilled an existence which, through self-denial and charity, redeemed what the other held in terms of cruelty and injustice. Born to poor parents and orphaned early on, I learned to be self-sufficient at an age when many would consider one incapable of understanding. I lived alone, without love and without affection, and from the very start of my life I bore the brutalities that I had inflicted on others. They say that all the sums I collected were entirely consecrated to relieving my fellow beings. That is a fact to which I, without pride or affection, add that so many times that the sacrifice of relatively hard, very hard, privations, I increased the benefit that enabled me to perform public charity. I died in peace, trusting in the merit that the reparation of my latest existence earned me. I have been rewarded far beyond my secret aspirations. Today I am happy, absolutely happy, at being able to tell you that all those who exalt themselves shall be humbled, and all who humble themselves shall be exalted.
Please be so kind as to tell us what your expiation consisted of in the spirit world, and how long it lasted from the moment of your death until your fate was attenuated as a result of your repentance and good resolutions. Also tell us what brought about the change in your thoughts in the spirit state.
That question awakens many painful memories. How I suffered. But I don't forget, I remember. You want to know about the nature of my expiation? Then here it is in all its horror. As I have told you, I have been the tormentor of all sorts of good sentiments. I remain for a long time, quite a long time, linked by my perished spirit to my rotting corpse. Until it had decayed completely, I felt myself devoured by worms, which made me suffer terribly. When I found myself free of the fetters that had kept me prisoner to the instrument of my torture, I had to endure even crueler torment. After my physical suffering came mental suffering, which is even more lasting than the former. I was put in the presence of all the victims I had afflicted. Periodically, a power superior to mine led me to face my guilty actions. I physically and mentally saw all the pain that I had made others endure. Oh, my friends, how terrifying is the constant sight of those to whom we did evil. Amongst you, you have only a faint example in the confrontation between the accused and his victim. That is a summary of what I suffered for 2.5 centuries, until God, touched by my pain, and repentance, and having been asked by the spirit guides who watched over me, allowed me the life of expiation that you are familiar with.
Was there some particular reason that induced you to choose a Jewish religion during your latest life?
I didn't choose it, but heeded the counsel of my guides. The Jewish religion added a small humiliation to my life of expiation, since in certain countries, most incarnates despise Jews, especially Jewish beggars.
In your latest existence, at what age did you begin fulfilling the resolutions you had made? How did the thought occur to you? While you were practicing charity in such a self manner, did you have any intuition of the causes that had led you to do so?
I was born to poor but intelligent and greedy parents. I was deprived of my mother's affection and tenderness at a young age. I experienced stronger grief upon her loss than did my father, who, dominated by greed, completely abandoned me. As for my brothers and sisters, they were all older than I and didn't seem to be concerned about my suffering. Another Jew, moved more out of self-interest than charity, took me into his home and taught me how to work. By using the product of my work, which often exceeded my strength, he made up for most of the expense I might have cost him otherwise. Later, I broke free of his yoke and worked for myself. But everywhere, both in work and in remorse, the remembrance of my mother's tenderness followed me. And as I began to advance in years, her memory became more deeply engraved in mine, and I mourned even more for her solicitude and love. It wasn't long before I was left alone. Within a few months, death had reaped all my family. It was at that time that the way in which I would spend the rest of my existence began to manifest. Two of my brothers had left orphans behind, and moved by the remembrance of what I myself had suffered, I wanted to save those poor little beings from a childhood similar to mine. Since my job was not enough to provide for the subsistence of them all, I began to beg for alms, not for myself, but for them. God was not to allow me the consolation of enjoying my efforts, for my little nieces and nephews also left me for good. I knew good and well what they lacked, their mother. Therefore, I decided to beg for the unfortunate widows who, not being able to work both for themselves and their children, endured deprivations that led them to their grave, thus leaving behind poor orphans abandoned and condemned to the same torments that I myself had had to bear. I was very strong and healthy, 30 years old, and I turned to begging for widows and orphans. The first steps were very difficult. I had to bear more than one humiliating word. However, when it was seen that I really was distributing all that I received on behalf of the poor, when it became known that I added to it the surplus of my work earnings, I then acquired a certain regard that was not without its charm. I lived for 60 plus years, and I never failed the tasks that I had imposed upon myself, nor had I ever received notice from my conscience that would lead me to deduce that a motive previous to my current existence was a reason for what I was doing. But one day, as I was about to go out again to beg, I heard these words: "Do not do unto others what you would not want them to do unto you." I was struck by the general principles of morality contained in these few words, and surprised myself by adding these: Instead, do what you want them to do unto you. Help by the memories of my mother and my own suffering, I thus continue to tread a path that my conscience told me was a good one. I shall finish this lengthy communication by saying thank you. I'm still not perfect, but knowing that evil only leads to evil, I shall do good, as I already have, in order to reap happiness. CZ Mel, CZ Gold.